I am your host, Monica Hadley, and our guest today is Jill Shulman. Now, Jill Margaret Shulman is the author of College Essay Confidence and College Admissions Cracked. Jill has taught writing at the New School, City University of New York, and NYU, and has been featured in Forbes, LA Times, the New York Times, and Parents. She combines her experience as a coach, writer, admissions insider, and empathetic parent to ease anxiety for students and families. And the whole title of the book we're talking about today is College Essay Confidence, Conquer Blocks, Free Your Voice, and Write a Knockout Application Essay. Welcome to Writer's Voices, Jill.
Thank you so much for having me today, Monica.
So I'm curious how you became sort of the college whisperer.
the teenager whisperer.
Yes. What led you to specialize in helping students get into college?
I started out as a writer, and my part in the process began as helping students write their applications. And that's what I still do with students, is help them write their essays and other pieces of their application if they'd like me to help with that. But the way I started was as a writer, and then I became a teacher of writing, and then I worked in admissions after my kids were old enough for me to go back to work. I went over to a local college and said, hey, I heard that you need help with admissions. And they hired me as a part-time reader, so an adjunct evaluator. And then I went over to another college and I did that for a while. And then during that time was when I set up my coaching business to help students one-on-one with writing their applications. During that time, I was talking to so many stressed out parents that I started writing these books with College Admissions Cracked, which is saving your kid and yourself from the madness. I don't advocate for the system. I just help families through it. And the book that just came out is called College Essay Confidence, to try to help all the stressed out students that I've met over so many years, and hopefully make any reader feel like they have a private coach, because I think every student deserves that. Not every student can afford that, certainly. And reach more kids to help them.
So how has college admissions changed over the last, say, 30 years?
30 years. Oh, it's like a whole new animal. So when I mean, just to put this in perspective, when I applied to college, I was typing on an electric typewriter, you know, my essay. And now there is a common application. It's online. And you write one application that is then submitted to many colleges, or you submit it to many colleges. And so going digital, making it easier to apply to more colleges, that combined with the rankings that came out in the 1980s for the first time, the late 80s for the first time, that combination has made it feel like a huge competitive competition. The reason is because the same amount of students apply to more colleges. And the rankings make people feel like there are maybe 80 acceptable colleges.
Oh, wow.
And that's so not true. You know, right. It's not hard to get into college, Monica. Over half the colleges in this country admit 80% or more of the students who apply. You can apply in June to rolling admissions colleges and start a few months later. So college, getting into college isn't hard. It's just if you join the rat race, it becomes a horror show for the students and the families.
Do you,
and there's no shame. There's no shame. I just want to add that there's no shame in deciding to join the rat race, because you probably don't even realize it's a decision that you're making because of the media influx and the stress in communities. So there's no shame in starting this process out saying, oh, you know, I'm doing everything wrong. I'm so behind. And that's how a lot of people start it in this era. But it doesn't have to be that way.
Wow. So with this common application, one of the things back in my day, which is way more than 30 years ago, part of what kept people from applying to very many schools was the effort of filling out the application. The essay would have been different for every single one, but also the application fees.
Yes.
And is that still an issue?
Yes, it really is an issue. And tuition has spiked.
Yeah.
Some people think I have to get my kid into a famous or prestigious university so that they will have peers who are smart and will challenge them, but not at all true. The valedictorian who can't afford to go to a private college ends up at a state university and is an amazing peer and challenge in the classroom for students. The other piece of it is, before you even start applying to college, I start out college admissions cracked by saying, think long and hard about what you really can afford without eating mac and cheese every day while your kid is in college. And talk to your child about it. It is not worth spending your whole retirement income on, you know, a college because it's a name brand. And if you can't afford apply to a private college, then talk to your child about it and don't.
Yeah.
I mean, don't let them get their heart set on something that they might get in. And then you have to be the bad guy and say, you can't go there. Having said that, for first generation lower income students, these richer colleges might pay full tuition for you. And so don't rule it. I mean, first go to the college website and see how much the sticker price for you will actually be before you rule it out.
And so you can tell that before you apply how much it would be.
Yeah, there's a calculator on every college website. It's not perfect, but it'll give you an estimate of how much you might get in scholarship money and how much you will be spending out of pocket. So that's helpful. One big unfair advantage that higher income people have is that they can apply early decision to colleges, meaning a couple months before the regular application applications are due, the deadlines. And it's a binding contract. So you know, when they give you a financial aid package, you get what you get and you don't get upset, as my kid's kindergarten teacher used to say. And that is unreasonable.
So when you apply early decision, if you're accepted, you have to go?
You have to go to that college, regardless of how much they offer you.
Wow.
Whereas if you apply regular decision, there are all these different ways to apply now. It's all kind of, I mean, I could get into it, but it's all
that's
in there.
That's the other book.
that's the other book. But when you apply regular decision and the the decisions all come in at the same time, you can compare financial aid offers to see how much. And what another thing that I tell parents is negotiate. Don't just take the first offer. It's really, some parents are very shy about that. They think they're going to renege my child's application, but they're not. They're expecting these calls in the financial aid office and tell them my circumstances have changed, or this college was more generous for aid, but my child really wants to go here. Is there anything you can do to help?
Yeah. Wow. So now with you do allude to AI a little bit in the book, in your book, College Essay Confidence, as in don't use it to write your personal essay. Because if you do, you are really gonna hurt yourself. But you know, AI is going to be changing job outcomes so much. Do you have any predictions how this is going to affect colleges? I mean, we're already losing small colleges left and right.
I know.
Yeah.
The losing of the small colleges, and then I'll get into AI. Part of that was predicted about a decade ago because of the population shift. There are less college age students starting in 2026. And so they were talking about an enrollment cliff that would happen around this time for population. But with AI, oh, Monica, I mean, I wish I had a crystal ball, but I will say that right now, colleges are using those AI detectors. What happens is if students use AI to find an essay topic, AI doesn't know you unless you've uploaded your entire memory bank into the web. How could they know these little details about your life that make you special? And if you use it to write your essay, well, if you get caught, you're out of the running before you're even considered. And that's just self-sabotage.
Yeah.
If you used it to proofread or edit your essay, we all have seen texting, how spell check and, you know, they change words into something you don't mean. So that can be dangerous as well. Having said that, it's completely unrealistic for students not to use AI in ways that make them feel more confident and less stressed out. And so I don't want them to feel like if it's going to bring them some more confidence to have AI proofreaded in addition
to
human eyeballs.
Yeah, and the human be the last one, not the AI be the last one looking at it.
I've kind of found that students are more skeptical in a way of adults. They're skeptical about, you know, they don't want AI to know everything about them, and they know that AI hallucinates. They're just more savvy.
Yeah.
Whereas adults, us adults, often are just more fearful. So
I'm just wondering whether the whole AI thing is going to change the equation of whether to go to college or not. Because if, like, for example, right now, 15 years ago, you wanted to get a really good high-paying job right out of college, you studied computer science, and you went into big tech and you had a cushy job and it was all great. And now, no, you're not, you know, it's going to be really hard to find a job right out of college. A lot of experienced programmers have been laid off, and so that's it decimated the computer professional program at my local university. And so what's going to, you know, are kids going to still go to school if there are no jobs for them when they come out? I guess that's the the question.
I hear all of that.
Yeah.
I think I have a lot of thoughts on this. I just wrote a newsletter about it. But to me, college is about learning to think and learning how to express those original thoughts that you're formulating. And that is a very, these are very human behaviors. I think what college has become, what you're talking about, is sort of more of a transaction than an experience. Mm. So for some people,
right.
So what you're talking about is you go to college, you get a degree to prepare you for a career. So you pay a lot of money to make a transaction, and in response to that, you get the skills to do a job. And what I'm talking about are, you know, I really thought back on it, Monica, and what was the most valuable thing to me about college? I mean, I was a double major in English and art history with a concentration in theater. Can you think of anything less practical? You know, it's crazy. And yet every single day in my work, I use all of these things. I use all the things that I learned about thinking about literature and art and how to formulate, how to write about it, how to talk about it. And then in theater, so I'm not afraid to talk to you today.
Right.
When there are listeners. So all of these things have come in really handy in a very human way. And I think people who have translatable skills like that, I imagine, will do better in the job market than people who are thinking of a college as this transaction. And if you're thinking of college as a transaction, by all means, go to your local community college. Here in Massachusetts, it's free. And then transfer to a two-year college, you know, and most of the big state universities have a huge amount of computer science classes or whatever you want to do.
Right.
I feel like there are other ways to go about this, but I just think of college as a different animal. And that's one reason I'm very sad that the colleges that are closing have a liberal arts bent to them, which is about thinking and learning.
Yeah.
Rather than these transactions. But I believe also that the, like, one, I mean, I never want to say anything was great about COVID, but a silver lining that came out of it was a lack of stigma attached to people who want to take a gap year, aren't sure college is for them, want to go into a trade. That pathway jumped right from working hard in high school to working hard in college to working hard in a job, that was sort of blown up by this disruption. And that's not all bad, in my opinion. I mean, every kid is, it's not a, you know, one size fits all situation.
Absolutely. Well, going into a trade, I mean, there is such a huge need for skilled tradespeople. And most, like in my small town, so many of them are reaching retirement age, and there isn't always the next generation coming up. Now, in some cases, there is, and we have some really good young providers too. But man, it's I don't see that job being replaced by AI anytime soon. They are, you know, our electricians and our plumbers and our carpenters.
Oh, yeah. I don't think AI can climb on my roof and chop down my ice dams.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Exactly. And then, I mean, this is a whole other subject, but then we get into, okay, if AI has replaced all the office jobs, and so half the people don't have to work, so we're giving a basic income, so because there aren't enough jobs to go around, then what inspires the people to do those jobs that do still need to be done by humans? How do we make sure that we have people to do that? It's a scary spiral. Yeah, yeah. But let's get back to college essay confidence.
No, it really has a lot to do with it. One of the first questions I get asked often is AI going to replace the essay? And I say, I don't know. But really, the essay wasn't always part of a college application. What the essay does is not get people into college. What it does is take all the, when I'm putting my evaluator's cap on, I get all this data. If a student submits test scores, which by the way, most colleges by far are still test optional, and you can go to one of my favorite websites, fairtest.org, and get a list of the thousands of them. So, but if a student chooses to submit a test score and they have their grades and they have AP scores, if they took AP classes, this is all a bunch of data that is analyzed. And after that analysis, the essay that pops that person who created all that data into three dimensions, into a human being. And if I, as an evaluator, can connect with that person and just understand that person a little bit better by the end of reading their first person essay where their voice comes out in the application, then I can see them walking around campus. Oh, they might be a great roommate for this other person we just admitted. And oh, I can really see them in the bio classroom making a huge impact. So being able to see them on campus helps me with that, discerning whether they're a good fit or not for the school that I'm representing.
Right, right. Okay, so college essay confidence, conquer blocks, free your voice, and write a knockout application essay. How is the book structured? What are you going to find when you open the pages?
You are going to find pep talks throughout. You're going to find things called brain boosters throughout to boost your confidence at the parts of the writing process where my students had the most trouble. So I go through four drafts of an essay. First, we generate a topic and get a blurry, hot mess of a first draft with tons of potential. And the theory is no one's ever gonna see this first draft, and no one's ever gonna see your first draft of anything if you don't want them to. So it's zero stakes. Just go, 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 write. All writing is a victory, including what your inner troll will perceive as writing badly. Just bleh, get it out. Then in draft two, we'll look at the big picture. Okay, what have we got? It's not all going to be pretty, but within the rubble, we'll find some gems. So what have we got? What can we add or substitute to make it better? Move or remove? Big chunks of words, like we're talking in the paragraph level. Some students will end up with a big, fat, you know, triple the length that they need essay. Others will end up with a little skeleton that they'll need to decorate in the next draft.
Okay.
The third draft is more the sentence level revisions. Let's make that pretty. Let's add transitions so it flows more smoothly. All those intangibles, you know, it doesn't feel right. Let's analyze why not and add a little description here to make it clearer, or fiddle with the ending to make more of a punch. You know, lop off a sentence at the beginning and fiddle with that. So that's more fiddling. The fourth draft is the polish, and Monica, even the straight A students who are approaching senior year don't really understand, not all, but some of them, many of them, don't understand what revision is. They think it's just that fourth draft in my book, which it is polishing. So the hardest part of writing this book was going through a revision process that could be somewhat universal without. So I give them a step-by-step guide with lots of leeway and lots of examples from different kinds of writers. Then I put the essays that I took those examples from into the back of the book, so that in the appendix, so that the students reading it can see, oh, Sonia, who has this lovely essay at the end of the book, like knockout, game changing, struggled with this part, and here's what she did.
Oh.
So,
and these are real student essays?
These are real student essays from whom I got permission mm-hmm. to use, but they're all pseudonyms. And I did not put what college they ended up at for fear, first of all, I didn't want them to be identified if they didn't want to be. I think most of them probably would have liked to have gotten the credit, but I just didn't feel like that, you know, because they're personal.
Right,
so I didn't,
right.
They're very personal. And so they're real students and they're real majors in college.
Okay.
With pseudonyms attached to them.
All right. Mm-hmm.
And they're students I had. And because I worked with them through all the drafts, I mean, the four drafts is more black and white than it will be when it is writing an mm-hmm. essay. But at least they have some structure, especially for the planners among us. Liking to have some structure is great. Too much structure in a personal essay, making an outline with Roman numerals and the whole nine yards can be a form of procrastination for planners.
Yes.
As much as waiting to the last minute can be a form of procrastination for seat of the pantsers.
Yeah, for sure.
So I try to make room for both types of people, and neither is wrong.
Now, the beginning part where you are, before you even get into the drafting, is actually takes quite a bit of the book, which is coming up with the topic and getting your confidence ready to start writing. So those are kind of the two things happening at the beginning of the book. I found the whole topic generation part really fun to read and very interesting. And obviously that could be used for other types of writing too, to generate.
The whole book could be used for other types of writing too.
Yeah, for sure. Memoir writing in particular. I could see it being really helpful for that.
I'm writing a novel right now and I'm finding I'm using the same process, really.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So tell us a little bit more about the topic generation, how, you know, some of the advice that you give on that.
So you're right that the first step is gaining confidence and just getting started writing, zero stakes writing. So you're right that a lot of the beginning of the book is that when my literary agent asked me, we were thinking about titles. And she said, what's the one thing that every student or most students come to you that they need to get going with their writing? And I said, it takes more bravery than it does skill to write well.
Yeah.
You know, it takes more guts to just plop stuff on the page, take the risk that it's not going to be great on the first try and not beat yourself up when it isn't, then it does take skill. And students who come to me, I'm a bad writer, I hate English class, I've never liked writing, I've never had confidence in writing, write some of the most amazing essays, Monica, because once you're freed up to write in a different way, it's like you're starting from scratch, and they find out they love writing in this way. And I've had coders come to me and say, you know, I hate writing. And I said, okay, so let's code this. And one of, you know, instead of writing it, think of it as coding. That's your love language. That's the language you feel the most comfortable with. And you'll see one of the essays in the back of the book has some code left in it.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, you can paint your essay if you're a painter and you feel more comfortable in the visual arts world. So when students feel freed up, like, oh yeah, I'm good at something, and I never thought it was writing, but let me see if I can articulate it in the way I feel most comfortable articulating it. Suddenly they start to loosen up, yeah, and they start writing.
So what and do you mean you could paint your essay?
Well, one of the students, I don't remember her pseudonym, so I'm not going to name her. What did I call her? Cassidy. It was the pseudonym I gave her. She was a painter, like a really accomplished painter. And her essay is filled with colors. Mm-hmm. Like, I would ask her questions. Like, when you think of your sister, what are the colors that come up? And we had so much fun. And the colors, when you read the essay, you see all the colors and the brushstrokes in the writing.
Oh, wow. And
yeah, and it doesn't. So the main criteria is that you find a topic that only you can write about, and you're excited to write it, because enthusiasm is contagious in college as well as in college admissions as well as life. You know, when you're at a party and one of your friends is so excited about, like, my son is really excited about physics and wavelengths. I, you know, normally my eyes would glaze over, but when he talks about it, I start to think about it and get excited about it. And that's the kind of enthusiasm you want for something that you're excited about. So yeah. I try to help them shrink down a topic, because every topic's been written about.
Right.
But no topic has been written about by you. So if you can shrink down the topic to something so specific that no one else in the universe could possibly write about it. Even if you're writing an event and someone else was there, they would have a different point of view on it. And you're into it. That's the topic that we want. So I made the whole book. My desire was to make it fun instead of a chore. So I'm glad you had fun reading that part.
Yeah.
And I made it into a championship playoff. So once you've, you know, generating topics, I gave four exercises to come at it from different angles for different types of people. And then the topics that you generate, we have a championship playoff. So there's, you know, first you come, you pick 10 to 20, then you have to narrow it down to four, then you have to test them in writing. Mm. See how it feels. Are you into it? Are you excited about it? If so, you found a topic. If not, then we go to a sudden death overtime, you know. I mean, it's just, and in the end, sometimes people see that all the different topics that they're truly excited about are all of one theme in their lives.
So, like, they can combine them into the theme.
Yes.
Yes.
And then those topic testing paragraphs could become examples in the essay about a theme. Like, there's one student who was, I mean, she was so into biology and ecology, and she was telling me about her hobbies, and it was beekeeping and making a mosaic and finding shark's teeth on the beach. It seemed so random, but when we tied it all together, her approach to all her hobbies was really finding a hypothesis, you know, researching it and proving it. And it was all kind of the scientific method put to use in many different aspects of her life. And it's so much fun when these students have an aha moment, like, whoa, I never thought of myself as anything but boring and regular. And here I've got this cool stuff I'm interested in. Wow. That somebody might want to read about.
You're listening to Writers' Voices. Our guest today is Jill Shulman, author of College Essay Confidence, Conquer Blocks, Free Your Voice, and Write a Knockout Application Essay. Would you read a little bit from College Essay Confidence for us, Jill?
Yes. I'll introduce you to two of my students who are really different from each other. The whole book, the hardest part of the book, like I said, was coming up with universal instructions for writing and revision. Here's an example of two different students. And if you're a student listening to this or a parent, you might recognize these people. The first part is from the very beginning of the book, the introduction. The secret to writing and world domination. Tyler breezed into my office at 1:02 p.m. for our 1 o'clock meeting. Sorry, I'm a little late. The traffic on Route 9 was horrible, he said. No worries. I'm impressed you made it, I said, and I meant it because the construction on Route 9 that summer was no joke. Tyler eased into the blue velvet comfy chair facing my desk. He removed the throw pillow from behind his back because who needs a throw pillow when you're 10 feet tall? I exaggerate, but Tyler qualified for the Tall Club's International Foundation College Scholarship, for which you too can apply if you're over 5'10 and female or 6'2 and male. Truth. Just set the pillow on the floor, I said, and Tyler did. Then he returned to his full upright position, head floating above the chair's upholstery, denim-covered knees jutting out far beyond the edge of the seat. Tyler could not have looked more at ease. He combed his fingers through his thick black hair, which bounced back into place in perfect formation like a platoon of obedient soldiers. I'd seen Tyler's resume before our meeting, and his haircut was not the only thing about him that looked perfect. You know this guy. He's the one who is captain of the ice hockey team, president of student council, and in the running for valedictorian, so you've heard. At your school, Tyler might be called Alex or MJ or Stella, but you get the idea. When you think of the person who has all the credentials colleges look for and will get in everywhere, everyone says so, Tyler is that person. Then I said, how are you feeling about writing your personal essay for your college application? It was as if I'd poked a sharp knife into the bubble of confidence surrounding Tyler. In the silence that followed, the guy everyone wants to be began to deflate until he slumped so low in the chair across from my desk, I was sure he'd disappear into the cushions if he could. His face drooped, betraying his downward spiraling thoughts along the lines of, I'm going to tank this essay and never get into a good college or get a good job or become successful or happy in life. No one wants to be Tyler at this moment, flattened by the prospect of writing an essay that he believed, as perhaps you believe, could make or break his future. I'm kind of nervous, he finally said. What I want you to know right now, at the start of our journey together toward your knockout college essay, is that I see you. You may or may not be the one spotlighted on the ice scoring goal after goal, or killing it at the debate podium, or sitting in the front row raising your hand in class. But no one is 100% as they appear. You have an unlimited supply of transcendent, blindingly bright power equal to Tyler's. You also have that voice inside your head that insists on blasting you with hate talk and blocking your light. I call that voice your inner troll. regardless of what's visible to the outside world, and regardless of how you see yourself today, you are worthy and capable of writing a spectacular essay, getting into a good college, landing a good job, and having success and happiness in your life. Confidence is the secret sauce to writing and world domination. Eagles crash. Wow. That's Tyler.
Okay.
And you can read his knockout essay that he ended up with after he got back through all that Route 9 traffic and went home and started writing, and in the back of the book. Another student is the beginning of chapter one. Lots of stories of students appear in here so that you might see yourself in it. This is Melanie. This chapter is called Get the Lowdown, and this section is called 10 Common College Essay Myths Busted. In the overgrown garden outside my office window, the yellow daylilies I thought could survive an apocalypse were wilting. It was the hottest July day ever recorded in Massachusetts, about 1,000% humidity. Admittedly, my frizzing hair was my barometer. Melanie arrived in my office, her golden ringlets like curling ribbons bursting from her ponytail. "You've got air conditioning," she said to the hardwood floor. Melanie took up very little space in the same blue velvet chair across from my desk that Tyler had dominated. Unlike Tyler, Melanie bristled with nerves from the moment she entered. She balanced on the edge of the chair, nail-bitten fingers gripping the arms as if bracing for a quick escape. I said, "It really is a scorcher. Can I bring you a glass of water?" Melanie reached into her tote bag and extracted a water bottle, held it up to show me she was all set hydration-wise, and clunked it onto the desk between us. Stickers plastered almost every inch of its surface. Lakeview Cross Country, Cup of Coffee Shop, Ski Utah, Don't Settle, Camp Timberlake, Nature is My Religion. These stickers offered a glimpse of Melanie's juicy inner world that I was eager to help her explore. "So, do you have any preliminary thoughts about essay topics?" I asked. Melanie flinched as if I had slapped her. She white knuckled the arms of that chair. And can you guess what this girl, who had disclosed via her water bottle that a huge cache of stories brimmed within her, said to me? Melanie said, "I've heard you should write about something that's totally unique, but I'm just normal and boring." Have you ever said or thought anything like this about yourself? All good, always, and no shame ever if you too have believed any of the common myths swirling around the media, dinner tables, and high school hallways pretty much everywhere about the perfect college applicant and the legendary college essay. We must bust those falsehoods immediately to free up your brain for the truth. Should I read myth number one? Or Well, myth number one addresses Melanie's issue, so I think it's appropriate. Myth number one: I have nothing interesting to say about my normal, boring life. No one is just normal and boring. I cleared up this misconception with Melanie, and I have the privilege of telling you that you are special, in case you were wondering. I know I'm right about this because I've never met anyone who wasn't. Most of us don't recognize our one-of-a-kind qualities, or we take them for granted. Plus, let's face it, society rewards us when we try to blend in. Unusual, or eccentric is not how people describe the Tylers of this world, which makes it hard to wrap our minds around the idea that our differences are assets. Remember Tyler's self-effacing inner troll voice? If you hear a voice telling you your life is boring and inconsequential, that's what your inner troll sounds like. Now that you've met this beast, you'll notice it shows up everywhere. Brain boosters throughout this book will help make sure your inner troll's demoralizing words don't linger between your ears for long.
And that's Jill Shulman reading from College Essay Confidence. So there's the inner troll, but then there can be external trolls as well. And so you write about when and how to share your writing and get constructive feedback that is helpful rather than harmful. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay. A lot of students who I work with complain about mostly their parents trying to help them with their essay, and it stresses them out more. And these parents, I empathize so much with these parents who I believe they just want the rest of the world to see how amazing their child is. Yeah. Like, they know how special their kid is, but they want to help get it out there. They want colleges to see it. Right. And they think that they can help students. And students come to me and say, they're overstepping, they're stressing me out the most. I'm having trouble getting confidence when my parents are telling me what to write or wanting to see every draft when, you know, it's not even my essay yet. It's just me playing around with words. And my advice to these students is be patient and kind to your
overbearing parents.
loving people in your life that want to help you. They are used to setting boundaries with you, but they're not used to you setting boundaries with them. So coat it with a little sugar when you say, you know, you have done an amazing job parenting me. And that's why I am so independent at this moment. And I feel really capable of doing this on my own. So thank you for letting me try. But, you know, civilized conversations about what's helpful and what isn't helpful can really save relationships between teenagers and their parents during this time. And a lot of students do show their parents at the end of the process. If you show anyone your first draft, that is like an invitation for your inner troll to come in and say, oh, they hate it or they love it. Wait until you've worked on it enough that you're feeling good about it, but do show other people who will be instrumental not only to catch typos, but to catch inadvertent things that could be read as maybe offensive to the wrong reader that you would definitely not intentionally put in there, and catch it before it gets to a reader, or something that seems a little blind to other people's struggles or that type of thing. Readers are really important, but not until you've worked on it and you have some confidence with the draft you're giving them and you have a list of reader guidelines in front of you. In addition to including that in the book, I included it on my website, jillshulman.com, and go ahead, go to that resources section and just download it for free. I have lots of freebies on there, and I'm so happy to share them with you if they'll be helpful. I have download of guidelines for parents of how to approach reviewing the essay, and I have guidelines of that's a download for students of how what they can give to their readers that will genuinely be helpful instead of detrimental to their confidence when they're going to make those last revisions.
Wow. Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about when you sat down to write this book. Did you already have, you know, how did you decide like which students to include, and what was your process like in gathering what this book was going to look like?
Well, upon first draft, I'm a pantser, which is a seed of the pantser. I like to blurt. Fun stuff comes out that I'm not cognizant of. And I was thinking about the students that I had worked with that last summer. And I was thinking about what they had in common and the process that I went through to help them through their essays. Every student was different, Monica. I mean, every student had different needs, but there were times in the essay writing process that were the points of most resistance. One was getting started, and the next was switching from creation only to revision, which also includes creation, but that shift really upset some people. Loved that first draft and they didn't want to touch it. They were afraid they were going to ruin it. And other people hated their first draft, was just, let's scrap it, it's terrible. And so this black and white thinking, getting them to let go of that and give their essay a chance and let's go through it and save that first draft, can always go back to it. You know, it's not lost forever,
right?
But let's play,
right?
You know, let's play around with it. So that's,
yeah,
I
noticed that was one thing you advised in here, is that with each draft to keep a permanent, you know, save that and then copy it and start when you go to do more revisions, so that now with Microsoft Word, you can go back to earlier versions within the same file, although it's not 100%. It doesn't always work the way that you expected. So it's probably safer to save a completely different file. Would that be your advice?
And I ask them to do it every draft.
Yeah.
Just it helps them feel confident moving forward. Like, I'm not going to ruin anything.
Yeah.
And trying is the victory. Mm. So let's try. Right. Trying is the most amazing, bravest thing you can do. So let's go for it.
So you have a student who loves their first draft.
Mm.
Is it ever good enough? Or do you convince them that it still does need revision?
It's never good enough. Yeah. It always needs revision. And it is rarely exactly 650 words, which if you know, on the common application, if it's 651 words, it will cut off that 651st word. But yeah, no, the first draft really, and as an evaluator, I could see those first drafts. So after I pants through a draft, then I do the organizing and the big fat outline.
Oh, so interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I looked through it and I thought, okay, what order do the kids normally go in? And where are the caveats that I need to put in there for a different kind of writer and a different kind of person? And I organized it. And then, so that was the big picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Add, subtract, substitute, and, you know, just remove big chunks altogether. I know about myself after many years of writing that I blurt my way into the meat of a story. So I know that the first paragraphs or pages are going to be lopped off probably, and it's going to start later. I try to help students learn that about themselves throughout the course of the book so that when they write later, college papers, memos to their bosses, their Academy Awards speech, like, why not them? You know, that they will feel confident knowing, oh, I do this. And so I know to look for this when I'm revising. So I try to teach them writing along the way, writing skills that they can take with them. So in the second draft, I look at the big picture. In the third draft, I, you know, kind of sweat the smaller stuff is what I call that section. And then, you know, I was fortunate that I had editors to review it, but I write pretty clean copy because after I pants it, then my perfectionist tendencies come out and I have to stop myself from analysis paralysis and all of this.
So you really do use these four steps, these four drafts in your own writing.
And yeah, but I wasn't even thinking about it until writing this book. Like, this is what I do too. Yeah.
Interesting. How do you know when you're done?
Well, you know as well as I do. I mean, I'm sure everyone on the podcast comes in and says, you could keep going forever.
Exactly.
I know. So I know when a student is done, when their essay feels like them. I read that essay and I could guess that student wrote it. They were writing about something that was special to them. It was fun to read because they were excited about it. And they said what they wanted to say, not what they thought colleges wanted to hear.
Which is another topic that we don't have time for. Yeah, I was going to talk about, you know, are there topics you should avoid and so forth, but you'll just have to get this book, College Essay Confidence, if you want to learn more about that. I want to thank you so much for being with us today, Jill.
It is my good pleasure, Monica. I had a great time.
Me too. And we always close with a quote, and so I picked one that you used as the heading of Chapter 4, Decision-Making 101. From Albert Hubbard, the greatest mistake you can make in life is to be continually fearing that you'll make one. So I think that is very good, a good thing to keep in mind, that just forge ahead.
Absolutely.
And thank you, and see you all next week on Writer's Voices.
Thank you.